Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. A Tentpole is a movie that, despite extremely high budget, is expected to help a studio stay afloat so they can make lots of mid or low budget movies, the films I try to cover. But since a lot of these tentpoles are popping up this summer and inundating us with ads and publicity, I can't completely ignore them. So this week I'm looking at two of them, an action movie and an action adventure, plus a sports documentary. The Deepest Breath, written and directed by Laura McGann. Alessia Zecchini is an Italian woman whose dream, since she was a little girl, has always been to free dive. Free diving refers to an extreme sport usually done in natural settings in the ocean. While there are many variations, it generally involves swimming straight down underwater as deep as you can go and then turning around and swing back up to the surface again. The type Alessia competes in involves a weighted rope that she follows when swimming up and down. The deeper you go, the better your chance of winning a competition or breaking a world record. But countless people go deep sea diving already. What sets this type apart? Free diving is done without scuba gear. Competitors hold their breath the entire time they're underwater. We're talking 2, 3, 4 minutes. It's considered an extreme sport because if you swim too deep, with the pressure on your lungs, with running out of oxygen, you might black out and drown. So they have safety divers who accompany you to mitigate the danger. They propel your body to the surface if you pass out. One such safety diver is Stephen Keenan, an Irishman known for his skills and dedication. So the two become close friends in their repeated dives, but can they remain safe at such a dangerous sport? The Deepest Breath is a sports documentary about Stephen, Alessia, and other free divers, both in and out of competition, as well as interviews with their friends and relatives. I was attracted to this documentary because I love underwater photography. The deep blue sea, the colorful fish, the coral reefs, the whales and orca, whatever, the things people see as they explore the depths. And sure enough, the photography in this movie is quite beautiful, quite fantastic. But I hadn't realized that most of the movie would just be people competing as they swim up and then down and then up again. Now, free climbing, that's rock climbing without ropes or nets, is a highly skilled and very hazardous sport. There was a great doc called Free Solo that came out a couple years ago. Free diving is not free climbing. To me, it just seems to be about who can hold their breath the longest as they swim up and down a rope like a human yo-yo. Okay, there are historical equivalents, like women in Japan known as ama, who used to swim topless in deep and rocky water searching for pearls in oyster beds. But they did it as an occupation, not as a hobby. And for the life of me, I don't understand, why do people risk their lives at something so pointless? I also found this documentary manipulative, misleading audience about implied relationships, which may or may not have been real, and while dropping false hints about the death of certain characters. No spoilers here. So if you're a fan of or a competitor in freak diving or other extreme sports, I think you'll love this movie, but otherwise, maybe not. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, directed by Christopher McQuarrie. Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise, is a spy who carries out top secret assignments as part of the IMF, the Impossible Mission Team, known only to Kittredge, his boss, played by Henry Cherney, who works for the U.S. government and other members of the team. His mission, this time, is to rescue a special key from another agent, Ilsa, played by Rebecca Ferguson, and bring it back. But this is no ordinary key when interlocked with a second missing key. This one can activate a lethal weapon so powerful it makes atomic bombs look like BB guns. The key was stolen from the Russians by an unknown entity, possibly an example of artificial intelligence gone rogue. Hunt liberates the key, but his plans are interrupted by a new player on the scene, Grace, played by Haley Atwell, who's a beautiful and glamorous thief who can pick any pocket or open any lock. She's working for Gabriel, played by S.I. Morales, a mysterious and ruthless villain who represents the entity, that unknown person, group, or computer program, seeking to rule or destroy the world. And her nimble fingers soon take possession of the key. So it's up to Hunt and his team to follow her through scenic spots in Europe and get back the key before the entity blows us all up. But who can he trust? Okay, Mission Impossible Day of Reckoning Part 1 is a light, fun movie with non-stop, and I mean non-stop, action. Now, I find most Mission Impossible movies annoying, like annoying the hell out of me for their ponderous plots and Tom Cruise-centric focus. This time, it's funnier than usual, and it's not all Tom Cruise. It also has many interesting characters, Ilsa, Grace, but also a deranged assassin named Paris, played by Pomme Clémentieff, and a diffident criminal broker known only as the White Widow, played by Vanessa Kirby. That's right, this is an action movie with four fascinating female central characters. Unheard of. The stunts and special effects are very impressive too, as is the scenery in Rome, Venice, and across the continent. On the other hand, the dialogue in this movie is atrocious. I mean, abysmally bad in some of the scenes. There's a sequence set in the Pentagon near the beginning that may live on in history as some of the worst lines ever written. I keep thinking it's done by chatbot, but even chatbot can't be that bad, can it? It's also part of a two-part movie, so you'll have to watch the second movie next year to tie up all the loose ends. But if you're looking for pure summer entertainment, check this one out. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, directed by James Mangold. It's 1944 in Nazi Germany. Indiana Jones, a de-aged Harrison Ford, is an archaeologist known for his bravery and derring do. With his sidekick Basil Shaw, they're hoping to find a priceless relic amongst countless crates of stolen loot. They're captured and tortured by their cruel adversaries, but they manage to escape along with part of an ancient Greek device invented by Archimedes called the Dial of Destiny, as in the title. Okay, flash forward 25 years to Manhattan in the late 1960s. Indy is now an over-the-hill college professor whose get-up-and-go has got up and went. His treasure-hunting days are over. His wife, played by Karen Allen, has left him, and his students don't care what he says. But everything changes when Helena Shaw, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Basil's daughter, shows up unannounced. She grabs the dial and runs off with it to Morocco. But she's not the only one interested in this dial. Government agents want it too, and so does Dr. Voller, played by Mads Mikkelsen, a former Nazi turned NASA rocket scientist during the space race, who Indy and Basil encountered at the beginning of the movie back in 1944. So Indy reverts to his old personality and complete with his hat and whip, flies off to Morocco. And after some jostling negotiations, he joins Helena and her loyal street urchin pal, Teddy, played by Ethan Isidore, on a transcontinental journey to locate the other half of the dial. But who will get there first? Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is the latest and possibly the last of the movie franchise. And considering Harrison Ford is 81 now, maybe that's a good idea. But I think he carries it off pretty well. Does the movie work? Totally. It's a family-oriented action-adventure film. And maybe I like it for the nostalgia factor, which is the basis of the whole series. Spielberg and Lucas made Raiders of the Lost Ark in the 80s in an attempt to recapture the type of movies they grew up with. But this one has enough twists and turns and motion and secrets and surprises to keep you interested start to finish. Mads Mikkelsen plays a perfect villain, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge is great too. I actually really like this one. To me, it redeems the whole series. Okay, one thing I don't normally do is compare two separate movies, but I was struck by how similar this one is to the latest Mission Impossible that I just talked about. They both have chase scenes, driving tiny cars pursued by gun-crazed drivers. A tiny yellow Fiat 500 in Rome in Mission Impossible versus a Moroccan tuk-tuk in Indiana Jones. They both have half of a device with incredible power, a key or a dial, and they're both searching for the other half. They both have fight scenes on the roof of a fast-moving train, passing in and out of tunnels. And there's a clever pickpocket, and Grace in Mission, Teddy in Indy Jones, who befuddles both the heroes and the villains. Lots more than that. And each of these tentpoles costs about $350 million each to make, not including publicity and advertising. $350 million, that's more than the budget of every single feature film made in Canada that year put together. Okay, so which of the two movies is better? I like them both, but I'd say Dial of Destiny is the better one. Indiana Jones is playing now. Mission Impossible opens this weekend. Check your local listings, and you can see The Deepest Breath now at the TIFF Bell Lightbox. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.